The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer more and more of our listener emails. So we have a variety of topics today. We are going to finally finish up with an email that we had received all the way back in September. We covered about half of the email before. It had some estate planning questions, and we covered a lot of that piece when we had Peter Scott here on an estate planning show. Today, though, we're going to cover some additional questions that this listener had. We've talked about this listener a number of times because we've known this email has been lingering out there unanswered. Jim feels very, very sorry for procrastinating so very long on this. Because he does choose the topics for each show, and somehow here in March of 2017, he finally decided to cover something from September of 2016. So hopefully the information is still valuable. I think it will be.
Well, he recently reached out to us and said, hey, you ever going to answer my
question?
He was
actually very nice in the way he reached out again after however how many months here, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, 6 months later. Wow. Hope he hasn't been waiting to make a decision in the short term based on your
The original feedback. Email came September 27th, 2016.
Right at, almost right at 6 months here.
Is it really 6 months?
Yes. That's a half a year.
You save the best for last.
This is our last show?
No, calm down. Oh. Mr. Excitement. Told you, we're coming out with a third hour.
We?
Yes, you, me, Junior, all of us.
We each do an hour? That'd work. Junior, you're coming up with the third hour. By the way, Justin Fundalinski, who apparently is now referred to as Junior on the radio show, is with us in studio. Welcome, Justin.
Thanks for having me again.
He is 20 years junior.
I realize that.
Hence the name Junior.
Okay.
Are you 20 years from now, he'll be taking over the show. We'll be retiring.
I'm okay with Junior, I guess. I can deal with it. I'm happy with where I am as a man, so.
Excellent. Well, Junior's in here because we have some there's some tax
You're not allowed to call me Junior.
I'm almost as old as he is.
He writes my checks.
I sign his paychecks.
That's true. Mr. Fundalinski is going to help us with some tax-related questions that are connected with Lone Star George's
situation.
So,
and I will say, well, before we jump into this, anything to catch up on?
I like catch up on my fries.
Okay. Anything new in your life?
In my life in general?
This is where we talk to each other.
Oh.
Apparently, there's nothing you guys want to say.
I'm at spring break at school, so we have kind of a lull, although I was over there doing some grading today, so teachers don't usually get full spring break.
I enjoy driving through campus now without
This is a great week
there.
For
oh
driving
my God,
around,
it's beautiful.
Isn't it?
Because I cut through campus to get around all the construction at Prospect and College.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I turned down that street there at the light.
You should just take Wedby all the way down past the construction.
You can't take it. Wedby stops at the construction Prospect. But I go the other way home. I go west.
I understand.
So I cut through campus on that road there. What's the name? Pitkin. So I turn on Pitkin, and then from Pitkin I take a left down some road. I forget the name of it, and it leads to another road that takes me right out to the
road you really want.
No, it takes me out to the road with the
oh Lord
the university.
College?
No, it's the road there, not with the university, with the
Front Range
hotel.
Community College?
No, it takes me out to the hotel.
On Center and
Center
Prospect.
Avenue, that's it. So I cut through to Center Avenue to Prospect.
But this is fascinating.
It is. Oh, my Lord.
Learning
All right,
Jim's turn-by-turn directions.
The point is, on Monday when I did said trip through campus, I realized, wow, there's no one here. It was beautiful. And then I realized it was spring break. So it was wonderful because the traffic in Fort Collins. Anybody listening, iTunians, you have no clue what the hell I'm talking about, but that's nothing new. The Northern Coloradoans, especially those in the Fort Collins area, know what we're talking about. The construction in Fort Collins is just crazy. And they got Shields closed off at Elizabeth. No. They've got Prospect closed at College. You can't get anywhere. And it's a nightmare. But if you cut through the university, you can kind of get around some of it, not all of it. Okay, so we do have a bunch.
Justin, how do you get home after work?
He goes the other way.
Turn by turn?
Yeah.
Well, I take a left on Mulberry. It turns into County Road 14 all the way to 257. I take a right, and then I work my way home from there.
You get a lot of traffic, though, too, don't you, especially on Mulberry?
It's just Mulberry, but I get through that really quick.
Do you?
Windsor to the office is 20 to 25 minutes. It's easy. I bet you people in anywhere in Fort Collins spend 20 to 25
minutes.
It's
got to take you
here.
At least a half hour to get home, does it? No?
17 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah. And you're Fort Collins proper, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes me 40.
Well, you're way down in Berthoud.
It's because he chose to buy a house not in the town in which he works.
Well, I wanted to be closer to Denver and Boulder, which I am. So on weekends,
so you,
I love where
so
I live.
So you come here...
And complain about the traffic.
Six or seven times as much as you go anywhere else.
I know,
but it's sure convenient that one out of eight times that you want to
It is. On weekends, it's a wonderful thing to live where I live.
Wow.
Okay. But anyways, okay.
Have you got your garden started, by the way? It's
yes,
warm enough.
I have started some. Some
lettuce?
For those iTunians listening on the East Coast with that massive snowstorm and cold, we do not feel your pain out here in Colorado. It has been an incredibly warm and dry spring. It's going to be 80 degrees this weekend, and it's only February or March, whatever it is. It's just been warm and dry. So, yes, short answer, I got the peas. They're not growing yet. I have some spinach in the ground, and last year's spinach is already coming back up. So
spinach comes back? I didn't know
that. Yeah, spinach will come back.
Oh.
So the spinach will probably be ready in another week or two to get the small little baby leaves. And then the new seeds will start growing. But yeah, if you leave spinach in the ground, at least out here in where we live, the winters are mild enough that it comes back.
I didn't know that.
Now you know.
I don't grow my own spinach.
I know that. And the peas have been planted. You like the peas.
I like the peas.
Yeah, I give you guys peas. So they've been started. And peas for Paddy's Day. That's what they say. Get the peas in the ground on St. Paddy's Day.
Really?
Yeah, peas on Paddy Day. Paddy pea.
What do you put in the ground on Groundhog Day?
Grapefruit.
Grapefruit, there you go. Begins with a G.
Gravy?
gravy?
I don't know.
Gourds.
There you go.
Gourds on Groundhog Day. Yeah. Peas on Paddy's Day. But for those who don't know, I do love to garden, so that's what they're chatting about. But let's get into Lone Star George's email. It's a very long one. I'm going to try to give the truncated version. We did address with Pete promptly, by the way, the first part of his question, which was, what now?
Promptly in December, I think, is when we covered it.
That's pretty damn prompt.
3 months.
No, he sent us September 27th.
December's 3 months later.
October, November, oh. Yeah. Was it really December
it was
when we first
prompt,
answered it?
Pretty sure.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, every quarter.
Which
we'll
seems
get
very yeah. prompt compared to our six-month attack right here.
True. So we answered the first part of his question with Peter Scott, the estate planning attorney. And it was a very involved, in-depth, that's why I wanted to bring Pete on. What he's asking now, and I've said this before to some answers, there's no, in my opinion, hard and fast right or wrong answer for his case. I think Justin will agree. I have Justin in here because this is going to involve some tax calculations. And I think, Chris, because I know you don't even know what the heck he wrote because you don't get to see these things.
I saw part of it.
You did see part yeah. of it? Okay.
And so, I will say there are probably some wrong answers.
You could probably give some wrong answers.
There's quite a lot of possible right answers.
Exactly. There's no hard and fast. Later on, we're going to talk about another email. It's a hard and fast answer. It's definitely, there's no ambiguity there. This is the rule. He's asking more not what the rule is, but what are our thoughts on being able to help him reduce what could be some very substantial required minimum distributions. And I think, again, if we had five financial planners in this room, we would have five different answers or five different thoughts about what they would do, what they would recommend. So let me set the stage of what he's getting to, and then we'll jump into some of our thoughts on an answer. Okay. One thing I want to let our listeners know, the dollar amounts that Lone Star George is talking about are quite large. And we know they're not going to apply to a lot of our listeners. But you can learn from the concepts that we're going to review. Because the concepts remain the same. And basically what we're going to be talking to Lone Star on is you have to weigh the tax benefits today to the tax costs tomorrow when he's trying to decide what he should do with some of his qualified assets, which are assets that qualify for special tax treatment, such as money inside an IRA, a 401k, 403b, things like that. That's what he's talking about. So it could apply to anyone. The numbers would just be smaller, Chris, but the concepts would be identical. Are you going to be in a higher tax bracket now? Are you going to be in a higher tax bracket later? What happens between retirement and 70 and a half, what we call the tax planning phase of your life? These concepts will apply irrespective of if the dollar amounts are as large as what Lone Star is talking about. Would you both agree with at least that?
So far.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
You haven't lost us yet.
Nope. All right, good. All right, I'm going to get to, he sent us a third email not too long ago where he asked us, can you please answer my email? Here's a brief summary. So I'll read that email rather than his first one.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I thought so.
Because then he's summarized it in his own summarily words. That's not a word.
Getting as bad as me over there. Okay, so he wrote to us Tuesday, September 27th, 2016. I'm going to begin with his original email and then jump to his summary email. So he began his email as, he said, I am a 56-year-old iTunian from Texas, and I'm quite curious about the following scenario and wonder if you can offer any insight. My 51-year-old wife, and he put in quotation marks, Georgette. We call him Lone Star George because that's the name he asked. We call everyone George. So he calls himself Lone Star George and his wife Georgette. We will not use his real name. His real name is not George.
But he is from Texas.
Which he is from
Texas.
Which
you could probably determine from the Lone Star reference.
Correct, yes. And we already have a star on Texas, so it doesn't help your mapping.
Well, a Lone Star.
We have one star all by itself on Texas, yes. Okay, he begins.
It's deep in the heart of Texas there.
Any other cliches you want to pass on?
No.
About your map with any, a star of on it?
Anyone, if any come to my mind, I will let you know.
Okay, thank you. So, as I've been trying to say, he wrote, my 51-year-old wife, Georgette, and I are the evil one percenters, earning in the top income bracket and the highest marginal tax rate with a taxable income of approximately $500,000 a year.
Well, I appreciate the taxes they pay on our behalf.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
He writes, we plan to retire in 5 years at age 60, when he turns 60. We have built a sizable nest egg. Now, I'm going to scroll back up to the top here because he updated his nest egg in his latest email to us, which was on March 4th.
Sounds like I'm going to have to take some notes.
Okay. Yes, you should take some notes.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have $2 million in Roth IRAs, $2 million in traditional IRAs and 401ks, equally divided between my wife and I. So they each have $1 million in a Roth, and they each have $1 million in a taxable IRA and 401k.
Mm-hmm.
Combined, we have $2 million in taxable holdings invested in tax-efficient municipal bonds.
Okay.
Our primary home and our second home are worth $2 million combined.
He's a big fan of $2 million.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm sure he's rounding.
But we, still, even if it's close, that's...
It's impressive.
Yeah.
We have no debt at all. Our annual income... Now, he put in his updated email, his annual income is $450,000. Mm-hmm. His first email, it was $500,000. So it's somewhere around there. And I don't know if this is gross or net. In other words, taxable income or mm-hmm. gross income. I don't know. Our budget is $180,000 a year after taxes.
Okay.
We estimate in 15 years we could live on $100,000 a year after taxes. I'm assuming there, guys, he's just anticipating slowing down some spending in retirement
because
mm-hmm. he has no debt, so it's no debt is being paid off at that point. So when I read that, and I guess I could have reached out to him, he does reply to us right away, that cut in needs I was just assuming is him assuming he's going to slow down and stop mm-hmm. doing some things.
Yeah, I might be doing some adventurous items that tend to slow down as you age.
Yes.
Expensive hobbies, maybe.
Okay, I'm going to skip all the estate planning questions he asked because Pete okay. got into those.
Yeah.
Let's jump to the retirement planning questions. So he writes, we are trying to figure out the best way to eliminate the ticking tax time bomb. Let me stop there, folks, and let you understand what he's saying. He's talking about Ed Slott's book. Ed Slott's, I think it was his first or second book, he called it The Retirement Time Bomb. And he talked about the ticking taxes that are going to be owed in IRAs and 401ks when you reach 70 and a half and required minimum distributions have to begin. Because at that point in time, you're being forced to take money out. And then when the first spouse dies, the ticking time bomb gets even louder. Because now the surviving spouse, remember, they are very close in age. They're apart by 4 years. They have equal amounts of money. At the death of the first spouse, the surviving spouse will have a small cut in income. There'll be a little bit of Social Security lost, but the required minimum distributions are going to be identical in size.
Mm-hmm.
And their tax brackets are going to be compressed now because as a widow-widower, they're filing single after the third year after death. And that is another ticking time bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the third time bomb is when a non-spouse beneficiary finally inherits the traditional qualified assets. The Roth accounts and the regular brokerage accounts, $2 million in a Roth, $2 million in regular brokerage accounts, those are not necessarily ticking time bombs. The Roth will always be inherited tax-free by the spouse and by the non-spouse beneficiaries. The traditional assets could be subject to taxes while they're alive, on any gains and interest and dividends, but at death would enjoy a step up in basis, at least under current estate tax rules. So the ticking time bomb I feel he's talking about are his traditional qualified accounts, the IRA, the 401k, the $2 million that he has in those accounts. So he continues, one strategy is to fill our tax brackets over the next 12 years until I turn 70 and a half by doing annual Roth conversions. So what he's saying is after he retires, should he convert in the 25 and 28 bracket to begin lowering some of his future RMDs? A conversion, folks, is when you take money from a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k, move it to a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k, and you can avoid required minimum distributions and taxes. Because you're going to pay taxes on the conversion, but you won't pay taxes when you take the money out. And you're not going to be forced to take the money out, except if he converted it to a Roth 401k. As Chris and I have talked repeatedly on the show, those Roth accounts will have an RMD, so we would encourage him to move any Roth 401k money to a Roth IRA before 70 and a half. Okay, he said, but I have another thought. If tax rates drop under the Trump administration, would it make sense to bite the bullet and pay taxes now on a conversion? That way, any additional growth will grow tax-free. I feel the pendulum swinging towards very high tax rates for us in the future. And this is key, what he's saying. He feels people with his amount of assets and his amount of income will be hit with higher tax brackets, maybe not by this current administration, but a future administration. So I like his train of thought here. I see what he's thinking. If taxes do get cut now, should he bite the bullet and convert even more under the guise that his taxes could be higher in his 70s, 80s, and 90s? So then he writes, I know you've discussed making this the subject of a show, and that would be great, and I'd appreciate any advice. My wife and I would even consider accelerating our retirement to within the next 2 years instead of five. So these topics are at the forefront in our minds. Thank you. Your friend.
That's not what it says.
You got to read it right through, Jim.
I'm not reading that word.
It's spelled out for you.
Your A-N-O-N-Y-M-O-U-S friend, mm-hmm. Lone Star George. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing because you're ready to push that stupid fish, and I'm not going to say that word. Dude, okay. Take your finger off the mouse.
There's other buttons that need to be pressed, too. The fish will make its appearance at some point, I'm sure.
He almost got me on that. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who sent you that fish recording, isn't he?
Maybe. I think so.
I think
he is.
And
then he set you up with
that word. He set me up with that word.
With a fishy word.
He did. He set me up for failure there, but I outsmarted him. Oh, wow. I saw the word and I skipped it. Okay. So, overall, I see what he's saying. Mm-hmm. The question becomes, how does he handle the taxes that are being embedded in his IRA? What I want to tell a lot of our listeners right now, the whole retirement planning industry is predicated... Oh, see, there it is. Now it's over.
You have still have a full minute. Don't just stop.
Well, what I'm saying is, these thoughts should be made by everyone. Because saving in IRAs and 401ks isn't necessarily the best thing. And you really have to take a look at where is your tax situation now, but where are you going to be in the future, especially at 70 and a half, when we call that period of time where you have no more income discretion. You have very little income discretion at that point, because at 70 and a half, required minimum distributions begin. Social Security is turned on no later than age 70. Pensions are paying out. Income annuities are probably paying out. So you have a tremendous amount of income coming out to you at 70 and a half. He's trying to look forward to that. But even if you're in your 30s, 40s, and 50s, you might want to think long and hard sometimes about fully funding these retirement accounts, because you're just setting yourself up for what Ed said, a ticking tax time bomb.
Perfect. So we'll investigate that some more right after this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. Listening to another top song from 1935 as we honor the beginnings of Social Security, which is a frequent topic here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Social Security, of course, started in 1935, was signed into law August of that year. This is the type of music they were listening to back then. This is a song called Lovely to Look At, written by Dorothy Fields, Jerome Kern, and Jimmy McHugh. This particular version was performed by Eddie Duchesne and his orchestra. And I think it was originally written for a movie called Roberta, starring Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. So a lot of big names from the mid-1930s. We're coming back here. We're discussing a particular email question that's been lingering here at the Retirement and IRA Show since last September. It's a gentleman that has a situation many people would like to find themselves in, which is a large tax ticking time bomb, which is a lot of money saved up in tax deferred accounts, which have required minimum distributions staring him in the face at the age of 70 and a half. He's got some time yet. He's still about 12 years or so, I think, away from that date. But he's been asking us to make some recommendations about how to minimize the effects of this ticking time bomb and what steps they might be able to take now and over the next decade plus before they reach that the buzzer going off on the timer, if you will, at 70 and a half when RMDs start. So Jim is madly figuring some things on his ancient calculator. And
it's not ancient.
Well, it's not as old as your abacus, but
it's an HP 12C. It's not as fancy as your...
You can actually go and buy an HP 12C these days. They're very expensive. They look exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And it literally looks like it came out of the 60s.
It probably originally did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
During its heyday, this thing was top-end technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all good.
It crunched the numbers perfectly.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So where would you like to pick up from where you left off?
What we're trying to get Lone Star George and all our listeners to understand, what he's really asking, Justin, is would he be better off? Well, I don't even think he's asking that. He's just fixated right now on future RMDs.
Yeah, and that's something I think we need to dig into a little bit more is, are the future RMDs as bad as they maybe appear to be? Is that ticking
What he's thinking.
Yeah, is that ticking time bomb as bad as it's like he's thinking it's going to be?
Because right now, remember, he's making $450,000 a year. And that is putting him into what bracket, Justin, 35?
If he's at 450, he's at 35. If he's at the 500, he's breached over the 39.6%.
Okay, so he's either in the top bracket or very close to the top
Real
bracket.
Close, yeah.
So we don't have his exact numbers, but his first email said he was making about $500,000 a year. His second email has it down to about $450,000 a year. But he does put himself in, as he put it, quote unquote, the evil one percenters. So I'm going to guess it's somewhere between 450 and 500.
Sure.
So his current bracket right now, folks, is about 35 to 39.6. That's his top marginal bracket. It's not his effective rate. It's important to understand, people, whether you're in the 15, 25, 33, 28. Well, that kind of went the opposite way there. But
you get the point.
Whatever bracket you're in, that doesn't mean all your income is taxed at that rate. Your effective rate is a blend of all the different rates. And as your income comes in, it fills the 10% bracket first, and then the 15, and then the 25, and then the 28, and then the 33, and then the 35, and then the 36.9. They all start to get filled. So some income is taxed just at 10 of his, making $450,000 to $500,000 a year. It's not much of his income. Probably the first month's income, or less than that, is being taxed at 10%. Then it's getting into 15 and then to 25. So it does grow, but he doesn't pay that tax rate across all his income. Nobody does. So you have to look at the marginal rate sometimes when making decisions, but the effective rate is your overall taxation rate.
Right, where you're making a marginal decision, which would be, say he has his current income, and then he chooses to do a Roth conversion.
Yes.
That's going to be more income on the top of what he has, exactly, what we call at the margin. So when you're going to assess the true cost of doing that conversion for taxes, you would use the marginal rate. At other times, though, if you're not dealing with things at the margin or at the top adding on to your existing situation, then the effective rate might be more important. If he, for instance, quit his job, had no other income, and then did a conversion, then the more important question would be, what's the effective rate on that particular income? Because it's his sole source, possibly, in that year, if he had actually quit his job, which we're not saying he should yet, but...
Well, that is something we may end up advocating for. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into a little bit of what he may want to consider. I'm just trying to explain to listeners who may not quite get his question how we as a firm would approach this situation and how he may want to look at it. So as Chris was just saying and Justin had confirmed earlier, we look in the office at your income at different points in your life when we run a retirement analysis for a person. So we look at their income now, and we also look at their income at 70 and a half. And we look at their income at retirement. So there's three periods we're looking at: right now, before retirement, at retirement, and beginning again at 70 and a half. And that Justin will actually graph that out in bar graphs. And you can start to see, Justin, it's very variable. It doesn't follow the same pattern. It kind of moves a lot.
It's all over the place.
It's all over the place.
Absolutely.
And one of the things we notice all the time, that period of time right at retirement when you stop working and you're now retired, and before 70 and a half, we call that what?
The tax void.
The tax void. Because at that period of time, you folks have a tremendous amount of income discretion. Lone Star George, so do you. And we're going to explain to you what we mean by that. During the period of time from retirement to 70 and a half, why does it go to 70 and a half, Justin?
Because that's when RMDs start and Social Security is forced on, and all this non-discretionary income is forced upon you, and it fills up all those marginal brackets. So you have to, any additional money you take out
is at the margin.
Is it at the margin?
Exactly.
I call that the golden window.
The golden window.
Oh, I like that better than the tax void.
The tax void sounds kind of ominous.
I called it tax hole, and he didn't like that at all.
No. I see it as an opportunity, so I try to use words that are more positive than void or hole.
Yeah, but it's a double negative, tax void, so no.
Maybe. I like golden window. I'll have to give him credit for that. Tax void was yours. I had tax hole, and every time I said that, Justin would giggle.
Well, still he is younger.
Yeah, I am a junior.
So, and then it got to the point I'd be talking to clients and thinking of him giggling, and then I'd start giggling every time I said tax hole, and it was getting embarrassing. So we had to quickly change it. He ruined me. Just every time I used to say, how's their tax hole look? He'd start giggling.
If you say it like that.
Yeah, that's why I laugh. Is yeah.
Wow. Is there?
Well, as he's doing the calculation, tell me what the tax hole looks like, because I've got to figure these things out. And anyway, so tax hole has been ruled out as a descriptive term.
Sounds like probably tax void might be on the chopping
tax
block.
Tax void could be on the chopping block now.
I'm a big fan of it.
I favor golden window.
Yeah. It opens for certain people, and you can choose to step through it by making your...
I like that.
Conscious decisions to convert and other things that you might want to do while you have lack of other income.
Golden window.
We'll argue this
void.
Later.
All right. We won't argue it on our podcast. So what we're getting at, folks, Lone Star George and everyone else, as you're trying to figure these out, you don't have to have the numbers Lone Star has. You need to produce this projection, this analysis. Now, our retirement analysis that we do for people will include a tax projection showing exactly that. Here is your brackets now, and it's done with a bar graph, and Justin uses different colors. So he has a little bit of color at the bottom, which is the 10%, and then the next part of the bar is another color for the 15, and then another color for the 25. I don't know what colors you use. All the way up to 36.9, and you'll see these bars are of different lengths during your working years. They pretty much move in unison, and then as soon as you retire, they drop off. And then they begin to grow again at 70.5. And it's being driven at 70.5 because you lose income discretion at that point. You got to turn your Social Security on at 70. I mean, you don't have to. You know, I heard there's 118 people who have voluntarily told Social Security not to send them the money to keep it. Oh. I had heard it was 118. Now, don't rely on that. I read that statistic a long time ago. It's probably changed. But you could voluntarily tell Social Security, don't send me my money. Now, no one ever does except for those 118 people. But your Social Security is turned on. RMDs, required minimum distributions, must come from all retirement accounts except Roth IRAs. And I can't even say except for Roth 401ks because it's got to come from them as well. Mm-hmm. So RMDs will begin. You have no choice, people. If you don't take the RMD, they're going to charge you a 50% penalty tax. So you have no choice at 70.5. RMDs begin. Social Security has begun. Your pensions are probably on. Income annuities would have been turned on, or they're very close to being turned on. You're still getting distributions of interest and dividends from taxable investments. So as Chris was saying earlier, all that, Chris, has to fill your brackets first. So any decision you make to convert at that point is a marginal decision. It's being hit at after all those income streams fill those windows or voids, whichever euphemism we're using. It's the new money on a conversion gets on top of that.
Yep.
But that period of time, Lone Star George and listeners, from retirement to 70.5, after you look at where you fall in, as Chris said, this golden window, this opportunity time, what is your bracket during that period of time? And it will be a lot lower.
Right, and the shame would be you've got this opportunity where you have no other income coming in, so the opportunity to recognize income at very, very low rates, right? You've got there's a certain amount of income that you could recognize at much lower than your normal rates, but you just let it go past. You go year, and then suddenly you may not be doing conversions, but you get to RMDs and that money has to come out. And whether you're taking an RMD or whether you're doing a conversion, you are recognizing that deferred income, that income that was never taxed, that's in these qualified accounts. You now, it's not like you can go back and say, oh, I wished I had recognized this back a few years ago when I had no other income. That was the opportunity lost, and that's where good tax planning can come in and really reduce a true cost. This is something, you know, there's lots of things you can do to improve your retirement situation, but a lot of it you have no direct control over. If we talk about putting your money somewhere, hoping for it to grow, the hoping part is that you're hoping it's going to. It might not. It might go down. Here's something. If you can avoid paying too much tax, that's something you can absolutely benefit from without a hope to benefit. It is take advantage of the tax situation that you were given and don't let it just, you know, flow under the bridge, lost forever.
Absolutely. So, Justin, I know we crunched a few numbers. What I'm torn on Lone Star is I don't know. He did write, what if under the Trump administration they lower taxes even more? Should he bite the bullet? Probably. It may be a good thing, especially if he can combine that with stopping work. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about in a minute. But what I wanted to do and what I've been trying to crunch numbers on my trusty little HB12C is I just wanted to say, and he didn't tell us how much he's investing. I'm just going to assume him and his wife are still both working because they have equal-sized retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to guess that they're maxing out their 401k contributions, which would be $24,000 a year that each could put in. So I just made that assumption. And if they had a $2 million starting value of an IRA, if their IRA and 401ks average just a 5% average rate of return between now and age 70, and they save for 5 more years, remember, they're contemplating working 5 more years, and they saved the maximum amount combined for 5 years, then, of course, didn't save any more into those 401ks, how big would those 401ks be? And you and I figured this out once before, but I did it again. How big would they be at age 70? And how big, under current rules, approximately, would his first year RMD be? We have to know that, don't we, Justin, in order to do this?
We have to know that, and we have to know what the Social Security is. So I'm going to assume...
He did tell us the Social Security was $2,400 each.
Oh, for each?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're pretty close to max on their Social Security as well.
So I did read in the email because I knew you wanted that.
Are we delaying Social
I'm
Security?
I'm just assuming we're going to delay to 70.
Keep the window open as long as possible.
Yes.
Yes.
So what we're getting at, Lone Star and listeners, remember, he's 56, his wife is 51. They're contemplating working 5 more years, but would consider retiring earlier if, for tax reasons, it made sense. So in order for us to figure out the size of their tax window, why don't we call it the tax window instead of the golden window?
Golden, for me, just reflected its value. The value of stepping through, of having the window open, and you take advantage of the tax situation.
How about the golden tax window?
Well, we know tax hole's not going to stay
golden tax hole?
See how he giggles? You just say tax hole, and he starts giggling. That's what happens when you're 33.
How about
and
the tax vacation or tax retirement?
Tax retirement? That's a nice one, too. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your taxes are taking a retirement. Mm-hmm. There's
coming,
all sorts
they're
of
coming
euphemisms.
Back though at 70 and a half, so maybe it's just a short vacation.
Yeah.
Your taxes go on vacation, so take advantage of that.
Take advantage of the tax break. How about tax break?
No. Tax break's overused.
Yeah.
People use it to mean other things. So.
Yeah.
Tax vacation. How about that?
Tax holiday.
Golden tax vacation.
Tax holiday. I like tax holiday.
All right. Tax holiday it is.
Tax holiday. It's kind of like duck holiday.
Maybe you should work some of these things out before we go on.
True. We're trying to answer poor guy's question, and here we are trying to think of what euphemism.
We're trying to come up with terminology that the entire industry will embrace.
But the listeners understand what we're saying. Lone Star, what we're trying to figure out, we know your current bracket. You told us you're making around $450,000, $500,000. We need to estimate what you're going to be exposed to with at age 70 and a half when there's no more income discretion, when the RMDs begin, Social Security begins, you don't have any pension, you did tell me that, and you have no income annuities. So we're just going to base it on what we think your RMDs are going to be in your Social Security. So I came up with a potential IRA value between you and your wife, Lone Star, assuming the same thing. For 5 years, you guys save the maximum amount, $24,000 each, in your 401ks. Your IRAs and 401ks average a 5% return. 5 years from now, the contributions stop, but the IRA stayed deferred until you reach 70 and a half. Then the RMDs begin. And actually, there's one mistake I made in this calculation. Darn it, I just realized that. His wife is 51. He's 55. So his first...
So for a while, it'll be...
Yeah, for
just
for a while, it's going to be a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm.
About half that.
But at 70 and a half of you, Lone Star, you and your wife will have an IR combined retirement accounts of about $4.37 million. Now, the RMDs are only going to be on half that amount initially. But 5 years later, you have to start full on RMDs. Now, those are your IRAs will be a little bit bigger. So if I did a little bit more calculation, I think your first year RMD, in 5 years, it's going to probably be closer to about $183,000 when your wife reaches 70 and a half.
But
as
during
well.
That time, essentially, they have, you know, the window is still open, but
it's
maybe
just
half
closed
open.
Halfway.
It's halfway.
Right.
They can still take some advantage before they are
the first
full blown
year
in the RMD world for both.
I'm
going to
get their first year RMD because it's not going to be as big a benefit because his wife is a little bit younger than him. So in year one, he's going to have to take out just an $81,000.
Okay.
So at 70 and a half, he has to take out 81. 5 years later, between growth and the deferral of his wife's, the RMDs are going to be closer to around 183 to 195. So let's just call it about 190,000 in 5 years, what his RMDs will be. Because remember, his withdrawal percentage will be higher than hers. So using an HP 12C in my head, these numbers are not completely accurate. We would strongly recommend a more accurate projection done with an actual analysis. But you get the point of what we're trying to show, Justin.
Yeah, I do. And so these are the non-discretionary sources of income, RMDs starting. And if you add on the Social Security that is taxable, which I'm assuming 85% of it will be, I'm assuming they're going to delay until 70. I haven't factored in the growth of Social Security, so it might be a little bit higher than this. But at that point in time, they have non-discretionary taxable income of $146,000.
At his age 70.
At his age 70.
Growing.
At her age 70, it becomes 250-ish. So it definitely changes over time, but you can see that that's way less than the $450,000 that he's making right now.
That's the hole.
Right. That's the hole right there. Well, actually, the hole is way before that.
Yeah, the hole is from retirement on, yeah. But you can see it goes from $450,000 all the way down to nothing,
right.
And then climbs back up.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So even though that it's climbed back up at that point in time, even if he didn't do any planning at all and he just continued full course right now, he'd be in a taxable rate upon age 70 at about, call it 25%. So he's saving into a 401k. He's saving 39.6 or 35% tax on that income now to later pull it out at 25%. So whether he went full steam ahead without any tax planning, it's still a fine strategy.
And remember, some of that money, that non-discretionary income, is going to come out at 10, 15, 20. Not all of it gets pulled out at 25.
Right.
So at that point, we should actually be looking at effective rate. Remember you were trying to explain the difference?
No.
No, you'd still look at...
We've already filled up until the 25% bracket. Oh, yeah, no, you're right.
No, but see what I'm saying?
Right,
some
right,
of that...
You're right. Yep.
Some what of was it, that? I didn't understand what you
well,
just said.
Well, it depends
said.
On
you
other
are
income,
right, Jim.
Too.
You are very right.
Thank you. See how he's trained? Go ahead. What were you saying, Chris?
Well, it depends a little bit. Also, those are just two income sources that we've identified, Social Security, and then the RMDs kicking in, which will be recognized as income. There could be any number. He's got other accounts that are taxable. He's got
sure. Right. What I assumed on that, Lone Star and listeners, he said he was invested in tax-free municipal bonds.
Right.
I was just assuming he was going to maintain that.
Right. And that's what
and
I
that
thought,
income
too.
Would not be now would have subject to Social Security to taxes, but that was a no-brainer. He was going to pay Social Security taxes anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But I just figured the municipal bond tax-free income would continue. I'm just doing rough calculations, Lone Star and listeners. I want you to visualize what we're talking about, tax window or tax void or tax hole. It's this period of time from his high income before he retires to when RMDs and Social Security are at full tilt. For him and his wife, because there's 5 years between them, his hole fills gradually, Justin. But it goes from $450,000 to zero up to 80 or so thousand, and then up to about 250,000.
146
to 250.
So, yeah, in the end, it's still okay for him to continue saving into a 401k.
And that's what we'll get into. Every $1,000 you put in, George, into a 401k right now, you're getting 390 or 350. Depends. We're not sure of your actual bracket. But in retirement, you're going to take it out and owe 250. So you could net a savings here. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time telling him at this point to start converting. When should he convert? We'll tell you that answer when we come back.
Perfect. So when we come back from this break, we're going to hear the number one song from this week back in 1977. It is on for the third week in a row, so it'll be a song that you all should recognize if you've been listening to the show here recently. The song is Barbara Streisand's second number one single, following her previous number one of The Way We Were from 1974. So she had a three-year gap there before her second number one single. So we'll hear what that is right after this short break.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556. Benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It is the number one song again for the third week in a row back in 1977. It's theme song to A Star is Born, otherwise known as Evergreen. There's a long explanation about this song that I really admire Tina for putting this together. However, it's of no interest to me, so I'm not going to read it.
Say what? She put something together and you don't want to read it?
Okay, the first two lines of the song originally were flipped, but lyricist Paul Williams called Barbara at the last minute and told her to switch the order because it would sing better. So what you hear is love, soft as an easy chair, love, fresh as the morning air. But it originally was the other way around.
Oh, yeah, that's...
It's very interesting.
Thanks for making me say it.
Yeah.
Why do we do all this?
I have no idea.
Yes, you do.
Songs. The songs? Oh, yeah. That part. Oh,
yeah. What'd you think I was talking about? For our new iTunian listeners who don't know why we lead in with a song from 1935, another song, number one song from 40 years ago, and then in the next segment, number one song from 35 years ago, why are we doing all this?
It all connects in a bizarre way to Social Security. I mentioned that 1935 was the year Social Security started. There's also a provision in the Social Security rules and regulations describing how to calculate your Social Security retirement benefit. And that includes a reference to something called 40 elapsed years, which was deemed to be a typical career span. So 40 years from age 22 to 62, actually, is where they came up with that 40 years. Then we look back 35 years to connect to the fact that Social Security uses your top 35 indexed earnings years in order to determine your retirement benefit. So that's our tie-in. We like to listen to pop songs from those 3 years, apparently. Mostly 1977 is where this started, because Jim has an infatuation with songs from 1977. Do you like Barbara Streisand and this song we just played?
She's not my favorite, but I could. Mm-hmm. I like 70s music. I grew up then.
Yeah. There's been a lot of music since then.
I know, and I still listen to it. Most of the music I listen to is called modern or alternative, and it's by very recent bands. But every once in a while, I like to stroll down memory lane with songs from the 70s.
Nice. So that's the connection.
Okay. Well, Justin has to leave shortly, so I want to get back into what we were talking about. Because the whole idea that we're trying to get Lone Star George to understand is based on, and we admit, very rough estimates.
Yeah.
I strongly recommend he consider running a retirement analysis. I really do. And a good retirement analysis would show him all this tax bracket measures that we're trying to get him to see. Get him to see marginal and effective rates. Get him to see his pre-retirement income, his after age 70 non-discretionary income, and that period of time that we still don't know what we're going to call, but that big whole void window period between retirement and age 70 and a half, where the planning can be done. In our very preliminary rough estimates, he's getting much greater benefit. We love Roths. But right now, to me, while he's working and earning $450,000, if he was to start converting, he's going to be hit almost at the highest marginal rate on conversions. Mm-hmm.
That is assuming he made some reference that he's worried that tax rates are going to skyrocket. If that turns out to be the case, which I would say they're the chance of skyrocketing rates in the next 12 years... I don't know that skyrocketing would be the word. I don't think the public would put up with skyrocketing rates. So that's kind of a political hot potato, if you will. Rates creeping upwards, I think that might be likely, especially for the upper brackets. But skyrocketing in the next 12 years, now skyrocketing over the next 30, 40, that's a whole different story. But over the next 10, 12 years, when we're talking about for him, I don't think it's likely that skyrocketing will happen.
And if Trump does cut rates low, it's not going to rise right away. He may get reelected, but even if he didn't, a new administration, you're still going to have 4 years of those rates, and a new administration may not be able to raise them right away, so you might be able to buy 4, 5, 6 years at these rates.
So that opportunity or that window we're talking about might open sooner than later,
right?
Depending on what happens with rates.
I would say, without a doubt, if he wasn't working, he'd have more and sooner this tax hole window void period. Mm-hmm. It would come as soon as he stops working. Now, if you stop working, you're going to not make the $450,000 you're making. You're going to have to start spending your assets sooner. So there's pros and cons to not working. But you're in a position where a sound retirement plan may show you and your wife if you could stop working now. And that would give you more opportunity to get money out of your retirement accounts. Because during that period of time, as Justin was calculating, you feel, and again, George, these are very rough estimates. We can't say for certain, but you feel, Justin, he could remove up to the 25% bracket from his 401k and IRAs in retirement and be in a very similar tax situation. And if that's the case, he's getting $390 for every $1,000 he puts into a retirement account today, and he's only going to have to give the government maybe $150 to $250 to take it out.
Right, it's going to be the marginal rate in this case because it's filling up multiple brackets, or excuse me, the effective rate. It's filling up multiple brackets there. So, if he were to take money out to fill up the entire 25% marginal bracket, his effective rate would probably be somewhere, you know, 18 or 21 or something like that.
So what we're saying is during your tax window void hold period, you may be able to pay $180 on every $1,000 you take out, when at least right now you're getting $350 to $390. Now, he may not have got that much throughout his career. I don't know if he was at the top marginal brackets for his entire career.
Yeah, we're talking about right now.
But right now, that's what those numbers would look like.
Yep.
So I don't think right now, George, you should be converting. I think a sound retirement plan is something you need to do. I'm not trying to push our services, but this is something we do. But you may be able to find someone down there who will be able to help you if you can't find anyone, let us know and we can work with you. But you might be able to find someone who can truly do a retirement analysis and make projections of the value of these accounts, what your required minimum distributions are going to be, your Social Security is going to be, adjust for your wife's age and get her Social Security benefits in there, and really help you determine how much are you going to be hit after 70 and a half? And that's the amount of tax window void or hole that you are going to fill. Now, as you get up to that or into the 25 bracket, which is what Justin thinks you can do with his rough estimate, anything above that, take from your Roth IRA during this period of time.
Absolutely. And those numbers we projected for later on in life, that's assuming that he didn't do any of this. So if he does actually take money from his IRAs, and I'm guessing he could probably take out $170,000 a year and stay in the 25%
between retirement and 70 and a half.
And that's $1.7 million he's removing from those accounts over 10 years. So that $1.7 million is not going to be subject to RMD anymore. And likely his marginal tax bracket when he hits 70 and his wife hits 70 will actually be even lower than we projected. And that's the goal in the end.
Right. So right now, we don't feel you should be converting. I just can't justify. What do you think, Chris?
No, I think there'd have to be some other overriding factor that would encourage someone to convert. And I think an event like suddenly a drop in rates due to a tax code change, suddenly he stops working, some event. But don't let an event like that opens this window go to waste. As soon as an event like that happens, really, really, I guess you should be prepared for the event. Because you've already admitted they're looking at retiring in 5 years, that event is coming. And if they decide to pull the trigger a little sooner, that event is coming quicker. And I think having the thought it out ahead of time will create a lot better decision-making process than suddenly scrambling at the end trying to put something together. And somebody who's competent in tax planning in this area would easily earn their fee in helping them avoid excessive taxes that they could,
and notice
protect
what
themselves from.
What we have described kind of flies in the face of conventional wisdom of people who were taught defer the IRAs, defer the 401ks for as long as possible, spend from your taxable investments, spend from your Roth, defer. We don't believe in that. We believe in showing you if you did defer and do nothing, this is what you're going to be faced with. Here is your pre-retirement income. Here is your age 70 and after non-discretionary retirement income. This is your planning opportunity between that. And again, Chris calls it a window. Justin calls it a void. I call it a hole. Doesn't matter. You get the conceptual picture here. During that time period, you, listeners, you get to decide how your income is. Do you take it all from a Roth during that period, tax-free? Do you take some from an IRA? Do you take some from taxable investments as a capital gain? What do you do and how do you do it during that time period? This is your opportunity because once you hit 70 and a half, RMDs, Social Security, pension, annuity, interest, dividends, they're all pouring in and you've got no flexibility, Chris. Or very little flexibility. So right now, Lone Star, in our very rough estimates that we've done, I think personally, you should do a retirement analysis. The estimates I have done show me you could benefit from a plan. You may have a lot of assets. You don't have a plan. You should put in place a plan. And work with someone down there who is going to look at these types of things we're looking at as retirement planners. If you can't find one, we'd be more than happy to work with you. Or you might be able to find one down there who will say, oh yeah, that's no problem. We can easily help you do this. Start making those projections because, I don't know, you may love to work. And you may really enjoy it and want to keep working. But there's also a possibility that you could stop working a couple of years. You don't have to work 5 more years. I don't know. We didn't crunch the numbers. But from the period of time you stop work to 70 and a half, we feel you are going to be able to get money out of those very large IRAs at brackets far lower than the marginal rate you're in now. And if you convert now, you're going to be converting at the marginal rate. Whereas if you take money out later, at least during the tax window void and hold period that we're describing, you're going to pay taxes at the effective rate, which is going to be a heck of a lot less than your current 35 or 39 marginal rate.
Perfect.
Good summary. Yeah.
Thank you. All right.
So thanks for joining us, Justin.
It was worth the wait, though, wasn't it? 6 months for that answer.
Well, we'll have to see what Lone Star George thinks.
True. See what he says. But Justin has to leave, folks. So, Justin, thanks for coming in for this time period. I know you're going to go pick up your brood of kids. For those who don't know, Justin has three.
Three children.
And Chris has six, so you got to catch up.
I already got my upgrade.
Yeah,
so.
I know. You've got the big snip, so there's no more kids for you.
It's an upgrade.
Upgrade? That's what they call it?
That's what, yeah, I call it.
Okay.
Going in for my upgrade.
You didn't know he had the big snip?
I didn't know we were going to talk about it on the radio.
I think you've actually mentioned it on the radio last time.
Yeah, we've talked about this before.
Are you fascinated by this topic?
No, it's just it comes up in conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. We'll end it there. Appreciate the time.
All right. Okay.
Gee, hope we have something to talk about now. Justin had all the good stuff.
We do have. We have another email.
Actually, you have a giant pile there still. So
I know. I realize that. We have a continuation of last week's last email. More has happened since then. So how much time do we have left in this segment?
We have
segment?
A little over 10 minutes.
Oh, plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Did we want to play a recording of last week's email? Do you want me to summarize it? Do you remember which one it was?
You summarize?
I'd have to dig it up.
So
you'd have to dig it up. Well, we could stop the recording right now, and iTunians would just hear the summary next.
Or we could play the summary at the beginning of the next segment and cover something else right now.
Well, that would mean... I think I have a short email question here.
Perfect. Let's do that.
Oh, this was for Justin to answer.
I'm just hoping we get... do we have any... Well, at the top of the pile, we should be putting anyone from Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, or Delaware.
This is a much longer answer. I don't know if we have anyone from
Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Delaware. They'll go to the top of our list because we need stars upon thars.
I think you could answer this one. It's a Social Security one.
Okay.
And I don't think you've seen it before.
From which state does it say?
Negative.
Okay.
No state. We should make that in order to send an email.
Expect your answer. It must include your state.
Your home state. So no state.
Okay.
But it began. This came in March 4th, so not too long ago. Did you see this one?
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay. But I think you can answer this because I know you and I have talked about this before. Hi, Jim. I was listening to your podcast yesterday and decided I would post a question to you. I was born January 9th, 1953. My wife was born August 23rd, 1954. Mm-hmm. She has been receiving Social Security disability benefits for the past several years. I plan to start taking my maximum Social Security benefit at age 70. Am I able to file a restricted application for a spousal benefit at age 66 and then switch to my retirement benefit at age 70? That's his first question. Mm-hmm. Can he do that? Also, would my wife be able to switch from her present disability benefit to a spousal benefit when she reaches 66? Any further input would be greatly appreciated. Thanks. Okay. And he put his real name, but as always, we are going to call him George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, so there's a couple things going on. I'll answer it kind of in the order he asked. He asked first, could he, at his age 66, file a restricted application for just his spousal benefit that he would receive from his wife's earnings record, delaying his own benefit to age 70 and then switch to his own? The answer is yes for him because he actually gets in under the grandfathering. That isn't allowed anymore. You can no longer file a restricted application unless you were 62 years of age by January 2nd of 2016. So he was, in fact, he did make it by almost a year, actually. He was almost 63 by that time. He was 7 days short of his 63rd birthday on January 2nd of 2016. And so he is still granted the ability to file a restricted application. So he could do that. And since his wife is already claiming, in her case, a disability benefit, the spousal benefit would be available to George. And he could file just for that, letting his own grow in the background to 70. Now, he then asked, could she do the same thing? When she reaches her full retirement age, which is when her disability benefit will automatically convert to her retirement benefit, could she do the same thing? No, for a couple of reasons. One, she can't do it because she is going to be automatically converted to her own benefit. She can't then say, oh, no, just give me the spousal. Plus, she's younger than he is and missed that grandfathering date by about 8 months. So for a couple of reasons, she wouldn't be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, even if she was grandfather, she wouldn't be able to do it.
She wouldn't be able to do it because of the way they convert. Back a few years ago, you used to be able to ask them not to automatically convert you to your own benefit when you were on disability and you approached your full retirement age. That is no longer allowed. They made a rule change a couple years ago that makes that automatic. And once you filed for your own, you can't undo that and say, no, just give me the spousal. It doesn't work that way. So for a couple of reasons, actually, for her, she is not able to file a restricted application for just a spousal and let her own grow in the background. The only thing she could do, which is not something she likely would be able to do, but just to let people know they have the option of doing so, after your full retirement age, you are allowed to suspend your benefit. So she could suspend her benefit and allow it to grow in the background, getting the 8% per year delayed retirement credits. However, under the new rule, it's now a couple years old or close to, when she suspends, that would shut off the spousal benefit that could be paid to George. So when you look at the benefits of hers growing in the background and offset that with giving up George's claim on the spousal only, that's unlikely to be a good way to go. But she does technically gain the ability when she reaches her full retirement age to suspend her benefit. She can't suspend it and then go pick up a different benefit. That's essentially what he was asking. That can't be done, but she could just shut it off completely if she wanted to grow that benefit and live off of some other resources during that time period.
Excellent. So anything else you want to add on that?
Only maybe to point out that the transition from disability to retirement benefits sometimes causes people some confusion about how that actually works. It is true that if someone is collecting disability, a spouse, once they reach the age at which they can qualify for a spousal benefit, could claim that spousal benefit. So you don't have to, say in this case, the wife doesn't have to be claiming her retirement benefit in order to open the door to a spousal benefit for George. Just having the disability benefit does grant additional, what we call auxiliary benefits, similar to what you would receive if you were claiming a retirement benefit. So that is something to keep in mind. Also, typically when it converts from a disability benefit to a retirement benefit, it's almost a dollar for dollar conversion. For some strange reason in the math, it oftentimes ends up being a few dollars higher or lower. And I haven't gotten a good clear answer from the Social Security Administration as to why it isn't exact. For some people, it seems to be exact. And for others, suddenly their benefit is a few bucks more or a few bucks less. But it is what it is. So the general rule is whatever you are receiving as a disability benefit, once you reach your full retirement age, it will simply convert to a retirement benefit at about exact, not about exactly, but at about the same
dollar. And I think they do that specifically because the disability pool is ready to go bankrupt.
Just what I always my own little bummy rabbit.
I will. Literally, this piece of paper snagging on that button right
you
there.
You did that last week, too.
I did. I need to stop sliding my papers around.
What I'm trying to explain is the reason they do this conversion, it's to keep the disability pool alive longer. I mean, it's just the money is coming from them, but they have the disability side of Social Security that has a pool of money that's ready to run out. Mm-hmm. And I think that in order to make it last longer, they're saying, look, at your full retirement age, we're just going to pay you from this other pool of money that's going to last a little bit longer. And I think that's why they do it, but they're not it's not that they're not supposed to, but it's really going to be around the same value. Right. Like you said, a few dollars off, but it's essentially the same value. Because sometimes we get questions, Chris, of, oh, I heard I'm going to lose my disability benefits. Now, if they don't have any retirement benefit, would they lose their disability benefit?
Well, it's unlikely they'd have a disability benefit
if they
without
had no
having
retirement
a retirement benefit.
True.
So you're only hearing half the story if you're hearing you're going to lose your disability benefit at age 66 or whatever your full retirement age. The second half of the story is that it's going to be replaced by
your retirement benefit. Which is equal to your disability benefit.
Correct. So actually, that was a perfect-sized email to cover.
Excellent.
So we are to our last break of this particular show on the Retirement and IRA show. When we come back, do you want to take a look at that continuation of last week? I can queue up the... Okay. Also, I'll queue up that summary from last week. We'll listen a little bit to the question that she posed. And then we're also going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago. That'd be this week in 1982. It is a brand new number one song. So after 6 weeks, Centerfold by the Jay Giles Band has finally been kicked off.
So what's the hint?
The hint is this female artist known for wearing red leather jackets proclaims her love for rock and roll with this song.
Oh, that's
a terrible hint because it gave away the title.
Yes, and the artist.
Oh, my goodness. That's okay. So at least we get to hear a new song. So we'll be back right after this short break on the Retirement and IRA show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It is, as I promised, the number one song from 35 years ago this week in 1982. That, of course, is Joan Jett and the Blackhearts with their cover of I Love Rock and Roll. Takes its number spot for this week and six more weeks hence. So we've got either that a lot.
I figured that song would be there for a while. That was big for a while.
It was originally written in 1975, actually, by Alan Merrill of the British band The Arrows, but the song never went anywhere. Joan heard the song in 1976 while touring in England and knew that she wanted to do her own version. She ended up recording covers not once but twice. The first time was in 1979 with two members of the Sex Pistols. That was Steve Jones and Paul Cook. The second version, recorded in 81 with her band The Blackhearts, is the one that really became successful, the one that people just naturally identify with Joan Jett and The Blackhearts. So that is our number one song from back in 1982. As we lead up to our update on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa.
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, I answer a blog listener's email about earnings after claiming your Social Security and do they really matter? And this particular emailer had a question. He had been looking at some online calculators to estimate his benefits because he was planning to claim his benefit later this year, but whoa, that was unexpected.
Coughing?
Yes, especially when I have a cough drop in my mouth.
It's not working.
No, it's promoting coughing. Maybe I misread the label. But anyway, was planning to work after claiming, continuing to work, and the calculators he was using had something strange in their results, telling him if he put in no earnings, or he gave examples of putting in zero, 20,000, or 30,000 a year for the future earnings, it seemed to make no difference in his retirement benefit from Social Security. So he was wondering, gee, maybe it doesn't make any difference if I have those additional earnings. And that's not true. And I go into the details on that. What he's probably running into is either a broken calculator that he's using that's not figuring things properly, or more likely what's happening is the earnings that he's projecting for the future aren't high enough to replace earnings years from the past that are being used in his Social Security calculation. So I talk about how that exactly works and refresh people's memories on exactly how their Social Security benefit is calculated, and clarify that, yes, indeed, if you continue to work past claiming date, if your earnings are high enough, you can benefit from that and see a higher Social Security benefit amount. Any questions, Jim?
Nope. What's new,
pussycat? So you can find that on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. Weekly blog post on, of all things, Social Security.
Hence the name.
So we teased people last segment. We're going to revisit a question from last week. And to get people up to speed, I'll play a little snippet, about a one-minute snippet from last week's show that describes the situation that our listener had found herself in. And we're going to expand on some of our comments from last week. So here we go from last week.
I am 33 years old. I left my employer B, in Texas, and have started a job with employer C in Missouri.
What happened to employer A?
She just totally blew by employer A.
Okay, so employer B.
She gets to employer A with how the...
Oh, so there was a leftover 401k.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, there. Now you see where this is going.
I see. Totally.
So
see
we
where
can
this
see
going.
How this national...
Okay, so employer B is the right place to start.
Correct.
She left B, heading to employer C in Missouri.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Okay. In employer B's 401k plan, I had a mixture of pre-tax 401k contributions, post-tax 401k contributions, and Roth 401k contributions. So this is telling me she's been with employer B for a while before they had a Roth option.
Well, technically... the Roth 401k contributions aren't in the same account as the other two.
That
just to make
we've
sure,
talked
we've talked
about
that.
That.
But so when she says they're all three mixed together, technically they aren't. The first two are in one. Then the Roth 401k contributions are in under the same overall plan offerings, but are
they're accounted for separately.
Accounted for separately.
And that confuses people because they get one statement, they see one 401k, and they see three contributions.
Yeah.
They look like they're one, and for all intent and purposes, listener, they're one in your eyes, but in the eyes of the custodian handling the 401k, you have three separate pools of money.
So that's from last week where we had that listener email us describing that situation, as you heard repeated from last week. And Jim has additional items to share on that
Well,
topic.
I did want to share a little bit more. And she and I emailed again last week after the show. She had listened to the show. She actually said she listened to it live on Saturday.
Wow.
So she went to the retirementandirashow.com's website and streamed it from
You could tell I had a cold last week. Me listening to it, I could tell the difference.
Yeah, but you still sound a little stuffy today.
I'm a little stuffy. That's why I had to resort to the cough drop here at the end. I'm starting to get a little scratchy.
Mm-hmm.
It's better, though.
It is. Much better. I mean,
last week I had to go through, I think, 10 cough drops.
You and Pete last week.
I was only on one.
I thought for sure I wasn't going to get out of this room alive. I thought I was going to catch whatever
you sound healthy
so
far.
So far, knock on.
So far.
Knock on wood. That's wood. We have a wooden table. So my little bit of superstitions there with knock on wood. I made it last week. Hopefully I can make it this week, too, without getting a cold. But what I wanted to talk about is, remember, what she did, folks... She had a 401k mixed with pre- and post-tax money, essentially. and she had a Roth 401k at one employer, employer B. She left for employer C in another state, and when she moved, she wanted to combine the two 401k accounts. So employer, her new employer, was more than willing to take the Roth 401k and take the money in the traditional 401k that was pre-tax. Mm-hmm. But the little bit of money, about $20,000 in post-tax money, they would not take. And Chris and I have said repeatedly, that's by design. The law doesn't allow it. The law will not allow someone to transfer post-tax money into a 401k. Pre-tax and Roth, no problem. Post-tax, a problem. They won't take it. So they left the post-tax money in her old 401k. The old 401k mailed her a check for that, made out to her Roth IRA. And she was a little bit worried because the custodian who was handling her Roth IRA, or more appropriate, the advisor who was handling the Roth, was handling her traditional IRA. She had a regular brokerage account. I guess you could say she had a relationship with a financial planner. And that planner who was handling that, she did have a Roth with that planner. But she also had a very large non-Roth, a traditional, IRA. Mm-hmm. And what she had told this person she wanted to do, because combined, her and her husband, she emailed me and told me, her and her husband make about $247,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So they are disqualified from contributing to a Roth IRA.
Right.
She wanted, and she said she told her advisor at this custodian, that she wanted to do what we call a backdoor Roth contribution. And that's where you put money into a non-deductible IRA and then convert it to a Roth IRA tax-free, essentially getting money into a Roth IRA when you were not allowed to do that, if you remember all that. Okay. Well, what this advisor told her to do was not only to do that, but she had a 401k at employer A. You had asked originally, where's employer A? She went right to B and C. So she had another 401k at employer A that this advisor encouraged her to move to an IRA with him. Hmm. So she did. She moved a 401k to an IRA with him. There was about $120,000 in there. Then he says, okay, let's do the backdoor Roth contribution. And he said, well, what you got to do is take $5,000 and put it into your IRA. So she went and took $5,000 and put it into her big IRA with him. Mm-hmm. And then he went and converted $5,000 of that to a Roth. Only for her to later find out she had to pay taxes on that converted money, on most of it, not all of it, but the vast majority of it, she had to pay taxes on it.
Yep.
And the reason is, and we explained it ad nauseum on previous shows, it's called the pro rata rule. I call it the cream in the coffee rule, that $5,000 of after-tax money, even if she put it in a separate IRA, which she didn't, she just put it in this big IRA per his recommendation. So he was wrong on a few counts, Chris.
Right. So she essentially had a situation where she started with no coffee, where she could take cream, the non-deductible IRA contribution, and put it in there and do the back door. She could have done that, but he ordered her up a cup of coffee. She, by her
Avente,
taking the,
it was a big cup.
The big cup, right? The 401k from employer A and rolling it over to a traditional IRA. Now she's got a big old cup of coffee. So now when she takes that little bit of cream and tries to do the back door, it mixes together and it doesn't work the way you're supposed to do a backdoor Roth contribution. The advantages of doing so are minimized, really, and not generally recommended. In a situation like that, it would have worked beautifully had she left the coffee back at her 401k at employer A. So she got really bad advice when she was told to move that cup of coffee over to this traditional IRA, especially after she says that her goal was to be able to do these backdoor contributions. That should have immediately raised a flag with a knowledgeable planner, knowledgeable advisor to say, oh, if then that's the case, we don't want you to have this cup of coffee over here. We want you to leave that over there. And then we can start to do these backdoor contributions.
Right.
So
the cynic in me says the advisor was just looking for assets to manage. That's the cynic in me. I could be totally wrong. I wasn't part of the
conversation. It's either that. It's either bad intent, if you will, in that, because that was that's just to line their own pockets, really. That, or it's ignorance of the rules.
Or both.
Either one of those are not acceptable.
Or both.
It could be
ignorance
both, right?
of the rules, and he True. Wanted money to manage.
Yeah.
Or she. We don't True. Know if it was a he or a she that was the advisor. Okay, so that was the whole scenario. And then we were running out of time last week, and I said real quickly, well, there's a way around this. Because that $5,000 that she put into that IRA, which was from the 401k, was $20,000 transferred over, then she put $5,000 in, and then they converted $5,000. Most of that conversion was taxable to her because the $5,000 of after-tax money, very little of that, probably 5% of it, right. was considered by the IRS to be that $5,000 of after-tax money. Most of it was pre-tax money. So she had to pay taxes on that conversion, and she wasn't expecting to. Yep. So she found all this out a few years later and was a little bit perturbed because mm-hmm. it wasn't working
she
right.
She should have been, yeah.
So I said real quickly at the end of last week's show, there's a way around this. Take that IRA and transfer it to Employer C, your new employer. Remember, Employer C already accepted Employer B's 401k. It accepted Employer B's Roth 401k. It would not accept the after-tax money, which is very typical. She took that after-tax money, the 401k Employer B, wrote it out to her Roth IRA. She was worried the pro rata rule was going to apply again. We told her last week, don't worry, put it directly in your Roth. It's made out to your Roth, put it in the Roth, and the IRS won't consider the fact that you have this big IRA over there. Mm-hmm. I then said real quickly that you could take that big IRA, there's $125,000 in it. You can move the $120,000 or thereabouts. We'd have to figure out the exact amount. But you could move the $120,000, leave just the basis. It's going to be a little less than $5,000. Leave that in the IRA, move the pre-tax money to the 401k. Then you could take that, let's just assume it's about $4,950. You could take that basis finally and do what you always wanted to do, convert it tax-free to a Roth.
Right.
And then you'll have no IRAs, so there's no cream in the coffee pro rata issue. And moving forward, she can start doing a non-deductible contribution and a tax-free Roth conversion.
Yep.
If that's what she wanted to do. So I started to describe that. Well, she wrote back to me, Chris, mm-hmm. and she shared with me that she tried that. And I can't find... See, her email is electronic. I didn't print it. Now I don't have it.
Oh, that's... You're going to get all flummoxed now because you have to actually use your iPad.
I have to use my iPad for what it was meant for. So she wrote back to me and she said, I will listen again. She began by saying, you know, I did listen to the show live. She told me a little bit more about her advisor I won't get into. And then she put, I will listen again next Saturday, which is this show we're recording today, to hear the rest of your comments. However, now listen to this, Chris. However, I have already tried to do that. I tried to roll this IRA into my new employer's 401k, just like I described. Mm-hmm. They are currently going through an IRS audit of our Safe Harbor 401k and are being rather conservative on rollovers. However, they, meaning her employer, went out and got outside counsel to look at the details of my account. This outside counsel advised my employer not to allow the rollover because it was composed of money that did not completely and 100% originate from a qualified plan. After being told this, I figured I'd never be able to roll it over. I will be interested to see how I can do that. She's running into incompetence mm-hmm. and bureaucracy. What was just said, notice how they said 100% completely attributable to a qualified plan. Those were the old rules. Those rules went the way of the dodo bird, and they no longer apply. However, my gut is telling me her 401k plan document has never been updated. Remember, we say all the time, the IRS will create rules. Custodians don't have to honor them.
Right. They can, they're, the IRS will allow certain things, but won't demand every plan do them. So they, so the IRS lays out all these rules that you're allowed to do this, you're allowed to do that, you're allowed to do that. But there's, and then there's a different list of things you're required to do this, you're required to do that. So the things that they're allowed to do don't always get implemented into an individual plan. We see this all the time because there is some cost in updating the plan documents for one of these employer-sponsored plans.
IRS allows...
And employers don't want to do that.
IRS allows 401k loans, but not all 401ks allow IRS loans. IRS... Excuse me.
401k loans.
Mm-hmm. The IRS allows, and it's not the IRS, Congress. Just so this listener will know, I went and dug up the actual law that allows this. It is called the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001. I'm sure you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
It was all over the news.
It's a weird acronym, too, isn't it?
Yeah, EGRTA. EGRTA
something, yeah.
EGTRRA. It doesn't, it's one of the
EGTRA. That's what we used to call it.
EGTRA.
Yeah.
It's one of the few, it's not even an acronym, it's a, it's an initialism.
No, we're pronouncing it EGTRA, so it is.
You do pronounce EGTRA?
Mm-hmm.
I usually go EGTRA.
That sounds like a medical condition.
But it is the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001. The provision we are talking about took effect in 2002. The code section. In case you want it in the IRC code, Internal Revenue Code, it's Internal Revenue Code 408D3A. That's 408D3A. That's the actual revenue code that says you no longer need to do conduit IRAs. Years ago, it was called a conduit IRA, listener. And in order to move a 401k to a 401k, you'd go through a conduit IRA. You didn't know what you wanted to do right away. You opened a conduit IRA. Mm-hmm. And that would only accept money from a 401k. You could never put any contributions into the conduit. And what it would allow you to do is later you'd have to prove the money just came from a 401k. It would allow you to take that IRA and move it to a new 401k. Hence the verbiage conduit. It was a pain in the you-know-what. So Congress finally decided, this is stupid. We're forcing people to take money from a 401k, put it in an IRA, leave it there, don't do anything with it, and then take that IRA and move it to a 401k. Let's just allow all monies to be moved. And that essentially what this rule allowed. The rules were a little different with simple plans, and they just updated those rules last year. But it pretty much allowed us to say goodbye to the conduit.
And as a side effect to that, allows monies to flow back and forth between these plans without some of the rules that are attached to them. Because what she was doing isn't really a conduit. She's just got money in an IRA.
Well, it would have been a conduit.
It would have if
she
hadn't
put money in.
Right.
She put money into it.
Correct. But you don't have to have a conduit IRA in order to move it into, to roll
no,
it over into a 401k.
No, the conduit has gone
anymore.
The way of Correct. The dodo bird since... EGTRA, as Chris would put, the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001. So the problem that I think is happening is the plan either the plan document doesn't allow it and it hasn't been updated. I would find that hard to believe because EGTRA has been around since 2001, mm-hmm. implemented in 2002. It's 2017. It's 15 years. I'm sure their plan document has been updated for new laws. And 401ks love getting money because it lowers the overall cost to everyone in the 401k. They love rollovers in. They don't like money going out. They love money coming in. So even though I don't know if it's because they haven't updated their plan document, it could also be that this outside counsel, who's more likely than anything the third-party administrator working for the retirement board of this company, whoever researched it is clueless. Whoever is working for that TPA, third-party administrator, who's giving advice on the plan, it still doesn't know EGTRA is around. And they heard, oh, no, that's got IRA money in it. That's got after-tax IRA money in it. We can't take that. Don't do it. They took the 401k with after-tax money. They just said, leave the after-tax money. That's the same thing this very same 401k should be doing. Yep. Move the IRA, leave the after-tax money.
Yep.
So what I'm going to encourage this listener to do is get a hold of the actual retirement board. It could be a group of people. It might be one person. It is someone who is running that retirement plan. Ask them to either update the plan document for the EGTRA Act, the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act, to allow her non-conduit IRA to be moved in. Or if that language is already there, get someone who, whoever said don't do it, it doesn't contain 100% qualified money, that person is wrong. And you've got to kind of prove it to them. The reason I want her to be a little dogmatic on this, she wants to do the backdoor Roth. She can't until she gets rid of that IRA.
Right.
She's got to move it into the 401k.
And her only option, that's her only option to move it to get out of this situation.
Right.
It's not like she can't go back to employer A and say, oh,
she doesn't
I took it
there.
Out. I need to put this back in there. They won't allow it. She doesn't work there anymore.
So she's got to get this IRA into the 401k, leaving just her after-tax money. Convert that, and then boom, you can start doing the backdoor Roth contribution. So she's got to be a little bit hard on this. And get them to change.
Perfect. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. Please send us your questions. We're getting caught up here, so we would love to get some more questions via email. Just go to theretirementandiraShow.com and find the contact information right there.
So, or they can go to jimhelps.com. It's a lot shorter.
True.
Just saying.
Okay. Jimhelps.com. We'll see you all next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.